Night, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Witnesses are reporting that Shiite militiamen have stormed the presidential complex in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a. Earlier, the rebel group known as the Houthis was said to be in talks to end the standoff after the fighters surrounded the prime minister's residence overnight. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has demanded the Islamic State group immediately release two hostages shown in a new video. In the video, the group is threatening to kill the hostages if Japan does not pay $200 million in ransom.
You now have 72 hours to pressure your government in making a wise decision by paying the $200 million to save the lives of your citizens.
Mr. Abe expressed indignation. Hours after the militants released the video showing an English-speaking black-clad person holding a knife along with two kneeling men wearing orange jumpsuits. The International Monetary Fund has trimmed its global economic forecast for 2015, with its economic chief saying the world faces what he calls strong and complex cross-currents.
Our forecast for global growth in 2015 is 3.5%, which is 0.2% more than in 2014, but is 0.3% less than the forecast we had of growth this year as of last October.
Olivier Blanchard told reporters in Beijing the world's economy is expected to grow slightly faster in 2015. Police in the Democratic Republic of Congo are attempting to hold a day of demonstrations against a proposed law that would delay national elections and allow President Joseph Kabila to stay in power. Opposition parties have called for demonstrations today as the Senate began discussing the proposed legislation. This is VOA News. That was the sound as voters in Zambia cast ballots today in an election to replace the late President Michael Sata, who died in October. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but the top contenders are Defense Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema, who heads the opposition United Party for National Development. These voters were pleased with the process so far.
Like in 2006, we had to make queues from outside the premises. And I think this is good.
I'm happy with how the elections have been conducted. They were a little bit fast. Yeah, the only problem is because of the rains.
The winner will serve the remaining year and a half of the five-year term that Mr. Sata earned when he was elected president in 2011. A female United Nations employee has been kidnapped in the capital of the Central African Republic a day after two other aid workers were seized. A UN official says gunmen believed linked to the anti-Balaka Christian militia abducted the Kurdish staffer today in Bangui. Reuters quotes military sources as saying the Nigerian government has ordered a general and 21 other officers to face courts-martial. The officers are suspected of sabotaging Nigeria's military campaign against Boko Haram militants, who killed an estimated 10,000 people last year. Last May, President Goodluck Jonathan charged that a Sunni jihadist group had infiltrated the armed forces and police. This is the first time army officers will actually face trial on charges of supporting the Islamic militants. This from the Associated Press. Indonesia's transportation minister told Parliament today that the Air Asia plane that crashed last month had been climbing at an unusually steep rate before plunging into the sea, killing all aboard. Ignatius Jonan said radar showed the plane was climbing at about 6,000 feet per minute just before it disappeared. He did not say what caused the plane to climb so rapidly. China's economy has grown at its slowest pace in 24 years. That trend is expected to continue into 2015, according to new figures released by the Chinese government. U.S. President Barack Obama will call for tax increases on the wealthiest Americans. He'll do that today during an annual State of the Union address, that before a joint session of Congress. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani today introduced his cabinet nominees to the parliament's lower house for a vote of confidence. That move came nearly 4 months after he took office. There was a period of negotiations with his election rival-turned-coalition partner, Abdullah Abdullah, on finalizing the list. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Voters in Zambia are casting ballots in an election to complete the term of the late President Michael Sata, who died in office in October. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but many say it is a close race between Defence and Justice Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema, who heads the opposition United Party for National Development.
That's Gillian Parker reporting from Lusaka. We'll have full details coming up. Also, the World Bank estimates Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone will lose more than $1.5 billion this year in economic growth due to Ebola. The International Monetary Fund has trimmed its annual forecast for global economic growth for 2015, and petrol prices have become a campaign issue in Nigeria. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, voters in Zambia are casting ballots today in an election to complete the term of the late President Michael Sata, who died in office in October. There are 11 candidates on the ballot, but many say it is a close race between Defense and Justice Minister Edgar Lungu of Mr. Sata's Patriotic Front Party and Hakainde Hichilema, who heads the opposition United Party for National Development. Gillian Parker reports from Lusaka.
Zambians braved heavy seasonal rains to cast their vote in an election with no clear front runner. Although voting may be extended because of heavy rains, that could hinder ballot collection in isolated rural areas. Ruling Patriotic Front candidate Edgar Lungu arrived at his polling station in Chiwana Township, Lusaka, battling a cheering scrum in order to cast his vote. Lungu has tapped into the popular support for deceased President Michael Sata, who founded and dominated the Patriotic Front, and whose caustic tongue earned him the moniker King Cobra. The Patriotic Front campaign has been built upon Sata's populist policies to uplift the poor and develop infrastructure, a sentiment that will win votes in a nation where 60% of the 14 million population live in poverty. Civil servant Ivanka Pika, who benefited from a 50% salary increase, says Lungu has her vote.
We're at least getting salaries on a better way. When I entered my job profession, I used to get about 1.7 million, but he increased it to a double portion. So that's why I'd also go again for this. So I'm going to make sure that I give him a vote.
But the International Monetary Fund warns the next government will have to rein in excessive public spending that prompted the Kwacha currency to fall last year. Zambia is coping with a gaping budget deficit and a sliding copper price that is at a six-year low. Copper accounts for about 70% of Zambia's exports and 13% of its GDP. Across the city, candidate Hakainde Hichilema, the leader of the United Party for National Development, the Patriotic Front's main opponent, addressed constituents waiting in line. Hichilema is one of Zambia's richest businessmen, owning the country's second largest cattle ranch. Popular with businesses, he has pledged to bring spending under control. He spoke to VOA before heading to the ballot box.
Why we are seeking public office is to ensure that we can create an attractive and basically business and investment environment, which is not just attractive but consistent, predictable and credible. Because then we can generate more investments, create jobs out of there and of course create value to support the social sectors.
Striding from a muddy polling station in Chiwama Township, farmer Machindi Rayson says he is ready for change.
I have suffered a lot. Look at this road which you have seen. No drainages, no whatever, things like that. That's why we try to change. Maybe you can have a better life. Like farmers, we are not yet paid now. But they promise that after 2 weeks, we are going to get your money. But now, up to now, we are still starving. I don't know where we are going to find money to buy fertilizer. That's one actually is a farmer. He knows those details.
Hichilema has profited from politicians leapfrogging from rival parties riddled with factionalism. The Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, the largest opposition party that ruled for 20 years before losing to the Patriotic Front 3 years ago, was embroiled in a bitter leadership battle. Its supporters could influence the outcome of the by-election. Results are expected to start arriving on Wednesday, with the winner declared by Friday. Gillian Parker for VOA News, Lusaka.
The World Bank estimates Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone will lose more than $1.5 billion this year in economic growth due to Ebola. However, the economic effect on the West Africa region overall is now expected to be much lower than previous forecasts. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
World Bank senior economist Dave Evans is co-author of the latest report on Ebola's economic consequences. He says the three worst-affected countries have seen their economies contract. Prior to the outbreak, good economic growth had been expected.
Essentially, the economic slowdown has been profound. This is a huge change for these economies and a real challenge.
Evans says when determining the economic impact of Ebola, the World Bank studies how people react to the disease.
With the economic impact of Ebola, it really comes through these reactions based on fear, or what we often call aversion behavior, people taking decisions to avoid any exposure to the disease. One of the challenges with that is that even as the disease starts to get under control and we have fewer cases, it doesn't necessarily mean that investors immediately start making new plans to open new mines or set up new factories. The effects can be quite enduring.
He says phone surveys show that despite a decline in the number of new Ebola cases, job losses remain high and food insecurity persists. Evans says there are previous examples of the effects of fear on behavior.
I think it's most reminiscent of what we saw with SARS and in the early days of AIDS, where there was a lot of uncertainty about exactly how people could be exposed. And as a result, people take sometimes extreme reactions to avoid any interaction with these economies.
In October, the World Bank estimated the West Africa region could suffer up to $25 billion in losses in 2015. But that estimate is now sharply lower.
What we've done is we've spoken to our economists in every country around sub-Saharan Africa. What we observe now is that the actual impact we're seeing for all of Africa, not just West Africa, is more on the order of 500 million. Very, very small. Even if we look at a bad case scenario, so a scenario where the epidemic does spread more in the region, we're looking at about 6.2 billion. For all of Africa. So that's much, much smaller than the $25 billion we were talking about for just West Africa alone.
The senior economist says the revised forecast is due to what the bank calls intensive global and national responses to the epidemic over the past several months.
The disease has been controlled significantly within the countries. So Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea have taken lots of action to improve safe burials, improve treatments, change behavior where people are careful to avoid exposure. And at the same time, neighboring countries have taken strong action to protect themselves. And we see this in Nigeria, Senegal, and Mali.
Nigeria, Senegal, and Mali did have a small number of Ebola cases, but all three have been declared Ebola-free. Evans cautions, however, that until the number of Ebola cases reaches zero, there is always a chance that the epidemic could grow much worse again. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. While sub-Saharan African countries have made relatively small but vitally important contributions towards the fight against Ebola, this includes sending much-needed healthcare workers and medical supplies, as well as dedicating already limited resources towards prevention and surveillance measures. Jennifer Lazuta has more from our West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
More than 850 doctors and nurses from African countries have been deployed to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone to help bring an end to West Africa's Ebola outbreak, which has killed more than 8,500 people since it began nearly a year ago. African countries have also collectively donated tens of millions of dollars in financial aid and material resources. UN Mission for Ebola Emergency Response spokesperson Fatemata Lejeune Kaba.
One of the biggest contributions the African nations have made are doctors. And it's not easy for people to decide to come and fight Ebola right where they could get infected. It's all good to have all kinds of facilities, to send labs, to send ambulances. Those are very important in the fight against Ebola, but you also need people to bury the dead, to dig the graves, to make the contacts. And those who are the forefront doing that are the nationals themselves.
The African Union's support to Ebola in West Africa says they plan to deploy at least 1,000 volunteers and health workers from African countries. Nigeria has sent 250 healthcare professionals to the three most affected countries. Ethiopia has deployed 187. The Democratic Republic of Congo, 82. Earlier this month, Kenya sent 170 doctors. The Director of Social Affairs for the African Union, Olawale Mayugan, said the response by Africans in the fight against Ebola has been tremendous.
There has been a lot of what we call African solidarity and Africa, you know, helping Africa, and it should not go unnoticed. Remember, Africa itself, we do not have enough of health, human resources for it. So to recruit 1,000 volunteers has been a huge challenge. What cannot put a price on is the human resources. It's the most valuable resources. It's helping us to fight Ebola.
Many countries have also contributed in ways that cannot necessarily be price tagged. Senegal, for example, opened a humanitarian corridor to allow for the movement of people and supplies into and out of the affected countries. Ghana serves as a logistics hub and headquarters for the UN mission. Kaba says other West African countries, particularly those that neighbor the most affected countries, have since spent money on putting in place border control surveillance, launching Ebola public awareness campaigns, training health workers, and pre-positioning supplies.
So that's one of the major contributions from the African countries. There are also the countries involved themselves that have devoted part of the budget to the fight against Ebola. And this is at the expense of other investments that they would have made in their countries if the Ebola outbreak had not taken place.
The UN says Nigeria, which saw 20 cases of Ebola last year, has donated more than $3.5 million towards Ebola response in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Other countries, such as Cote d'Ivoire, Namibia, and Kenya, have each donated $1 million to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. South Africa has given more than $300,000, along with donating medical supplies such as PPE suits and ambulances, helping build a 40-bed treatment center and training nearly 100 health workers from 16 countries. More than a dozen healthcare workers from South Africa will leave for Sierra Leone later this week. In November, more than 60 local African businesses pledged $28.5 million to fight Ebola. Ethiopia launched a campaign in December that allows individuals from the private sector, who are not doctors or nurses but want to help, to donate towards Ebola response via SMS. Burundi, Chad, the Central African Republic, Ghana, Kenya, Lesotho, Senegal, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe have similar programs. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
The International Monetary Fund has trimmed its annual forecast for global economic growth for 2015, but still expects the world's economy to strengthen this year overall. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
The IMF's top economist says the global economy is facing strong and complex cross-currents this year, with the declining price of oil and continued challenges for both economies in Europe and Japan. And while the group has lowered its projection for growth this year from 3.8% to 3.5%, it will still be an improvement over 2014. IMF chief economist Olivier Blanchard says the decline in oil prices will give global growth a boost, but not all will benefit from lower prices.
On the one hand, major economies are benefiting from the decline in the price of oil. But on the other, in many parts of the world, lower long-run prospects adversely affect investment and are resulting in a very strong undertow.
Since June of last year, the price of oil has plunged from around $100 to below $50 a barrel. The decline in oil price will help importing countries across the globe, but not oil-exporting countries such as Russia and Nigeria.
For oil exporters
and for firms involved in new firms of energy production, this is clearly bad news.
According to the report, the World Economic Outlook, lagging growth prospects in China, Russia, Europe, and Japan were a key reason for the adjustment in overall growth. The United States was the only major economy in the report that had its growth projections raised. According to the IMF, the United States should see growth around 3.5% in 2015, a half percent higher than the projection the group made in October. Japan, on the other hand, was one of the major disappointments of 2014. Blanchard says the momentum there for structural reform is still too weak to raise expectations about future growth or spurring investment. But Japan and Europe, which both saw their forecasts cut, could benefit from currency fluctuations, he adds. Since August, the dollar has risen 7%, while the euro and yen have depreciated. Blanchard says that while the dollar's rise will slow the recovery in the United States, the recovery is quite strong and will continue.
At the same time, the depreciation of the euro and of the yen will give a much needed boost to demand in those two parts of the world, which very much need an increase in demand.
In sub-Saharan Africa, economists say lower oil and commodity prices are also responsible for weaker growth forecasts, in particular in Nigeria and South Africa. Falling commodity prices are also lowering the growth forecast in countries in Latin America and the Caribbean. Meanwhile, the IMF says economic growth in China is expected to slip below 7% this year. According to the IMF's new forecast, growth is expected to continue to slow and slip to 6.8% this year. Blanchard says slower growth is a good thing, though, because it shows that China is trying to steer the economy toward consumption and away from the real estate sector and shadow banking. However, he adds, slower growth in China will have an impact on the rest of Asia. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
Petrol prices have become a campaign issue in Nigeria. The French news agency reports opposition parties are calling for bigger reductions in the cost per liter as world oil prices continue to fall. On Sunday, Nigeria's oil minister announced a 10 naira reduction for a liter of petrol, lowering the cost to 87 naira. However, opposition parties say the price of petrol should be lowered to 70. They also say diesel and kerosene prices should be cut much further. Nigeria holds a presidential election next month. In other news on Nigeria, government officials say thousands of chickens had to be slaughtered in Lagos and Port Harcourt due to an outbreak of bird flu. Officials are monitoring the situation and an update on the outbreak is expected soon on the type of bird flu discovered. Currently, it is not believed to be the H5N1 strain that has killed about 400 people since it first appeared in 2003. The combined wealth of the world's richest 1% will overtake that of the remaining 99% at some point in 2016, according to the anti-poverty charity Oxfam. Henry Ridgewell reports from London that campaigners are demanding that policymakers take action to address the widening gap between the haves and have-nots.
Oxfam says an explosion of inequality is holding back the fight against global poverty. When 1 in 9 people around the world do not have enough food to eat, the growing gap between rich and poor is scandalous, says Oxfam's Max Lawson.
The incredible concentration of wealth right at the top of society, which is deeply, deeply divisive and very, very economically inefficient. So we're very worried about that. It's bad for the planet, it's bad for the economy, and it seems to be getting worse.
The report comes as global business and political leaders prepare to gather in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum. Campaigners like Lawson are calling on policymakers to play their part in tackling extreme inequality, beginning by taxing the rich more.
You've got mining companies in Africa that are busy making an absolute fortune and paying no tax. Tax isn't just about money. It's better to visualise tax as schools, as hospitals.
Using data from the bank Credit Suisse and Forbes, Oxfam says the richest 1% of the world's population currently owns 48% of its wealth, and that's set to exceed 50% next year. Professor Andy Green of the Institute of Education at University College London says there are a multitude of mechanisms driving inequality.
Technological change, which is biased in favour of higher skills, which reduces the demand for low-skilled people and therefore reduces their bargaining power on wages. Weakening trade unions, stronger corporate power.
Green says that power is used to influence government policy.
Large corporations have so much lobbying power now, and regulation makes a great deal of difference, not only to company profitability in all sorts of ways, but to what you can do in terms of paying your top owners.
Along with moral and economic arguments, there are also links between wealth inequality and violence, including terrorism, says Professor Tim Krieger of Freiburg University in Germany, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
Even religious terrorism has a strong economic component. So you use the religion as the vehicle to express your dissatisfaction with the political situation, with the economic situation, and here inequality comes into play.
Analysts say one of the regions where growing wealth inequality has driven social unrest in recent years is Southern Europe. In Greece, worst hit by the global economic crisis, extreme politics is on the rise, and polls show the far-left Syriza party is expected to win next week's elections. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Here in the U.S., President Barack Obama will call for tax increases on the wealthiest Americans during the annual State of the Union address before a joint session of Congress today. It will be the first address of his presidency to a Congress completely dominated by opposition Republicans. Mr. Obama will call for raising taxes on profits individuals make from selling assets such as stocks, bonds, and real estate. He'll also recommend ending tax breaks for inherited estates worth millions of dollars and imposing a fee on the country's biggest financial firms. The proposals have already been soundly rejected by Republican lawmakers who gained control of both the House and Senate after sweeping victories in last November's midterm elections. Despite the victories, Mr. Obama has vowed to veto a number of Republican priorities, including arrival of a controversial oil pipeline from Canada to the U.S. Gulf Coast and changes to his signature health care reform law. And on a programming note, join us for complete coverage of the President's State of the Union speech tomorrow, January 21st at 0:30 UTC. This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's 28 minutes past the hour on the Voice of America.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Voters in Zambia are casting ballots today in an election to replace late President Michael Sata, who died in October. And the World Bank estimates Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone will lose more than $1.5 billion this year in economic growth due to Ebola. Coming up, we'll have music and our feature reports. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is African News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And, of course, it's time now for the Sunny Side of Sports with Sunny Young. Hello, Sunny.
Hello, Kim.
Well, Sunny, what's the latest on the Nations Cup tournament in Equatorial Guinea?
Kim, Guinea and Ivory Coast played to a one-all draw Tuesday in the opening match for both teams at the 30th Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Equatorial Guinea. France-based striker Mohamed Yatara gave Guinea the lead in the 36th minute in the capital, Malabo, with a wonderful left-footed volley. In the 58th minute, Ivory Coast lost one of its best players, Roma star Gervinho, who was given a red card for slapping a Guinea player. The elephants of Ivory Coast, playing with 10 men, fought back and equalized in the 72nd minute on a goal by Seydou Doumbia. Once again, the final from Malabo, Guinea won, Ivory Coast won. Mali will meet Cameroon in Tuesday's second Nations Cup match in Equatorial Guinea's capital. Our VOA Nations Cup fans will remember, Equatorial Guinea stepped in as an emergency host only 9 weeks before the tournament kicked off. Morocco, which was scheduled to host the event, wanted the competition postponed because of Ebola fears. Guinea has been one of the countries hardest hit by Ebola, with more than 1,800 deaths reported in the country. Before the match against Ivory Coast, Guinea's French coach Michel Dussier was asked if his team was getting any special medical treatment in Equatorial Guinea.
In Equatorial Guinea, there was nothing special for us. I think medical test has been done for each team, and as the other team, we have the same treatment, so nothing special. It was more difficult during the qualifying, but now here, since we are here, we are very well welcomed, and no problem with that.
That's Frenchman Michel Dussier, the head coach of Guinea's Nations Cup football team. And Coach Dussier was speaking in Equatorial Guinea's capital, Malabo.
The Voice of America.
Avoid direct skin and body contact with anyone suffering from Ebola. My name is Cristiano Ronaldo. Together, we can beat Ebola.
In Nations Cup action Monday, Algeria and Senegal both posted come-from-behind victories, as we hear now from the VOA's Daybreak Africa sportsman, Mark Ouma.
Senegal fought from a goal down to edge Ghana 2-1 in Mongomo on Monday. Then in a similar fashion, Algeria rallied from behind to defeat South Africa 3-1 in the other Group C tie. Meanwhile, South Africa's coach Ephraim Sheikh Mashaba is positive they'll bounce back in subsequent matches. He's satisfied with their performance.
The biggest mistake we've made, we went to sleep after scoring one goal. But if you look at that, we're still a better side. We have created a lot of chances that we couldn't score. It does happen always. If you don't take your chances, you'll be in trouble. But truly speaking, our boys played very well. The second goal that we should have scored a penalty, that took a steam out of us. And then now we got lost. Nobody know where to stay, where to pick up, and where to look, to clear. We will work on these mistakes. We are aware of what went wrong. We will definitely fix that. Yes, we've got two good games to go. We need to make sure we win. But we have seen, we were playing against the number one in Africa, but we exposed them. The only thing we lacked that, just hold on into that goal. We were no more solid. We were scattered all over the park, especially the right back and the left back. We allowed them to stretch us, and they played wide behind us, and they were always coming down the line, and they played crosses, and which was difficult for us to defend. It will definitely make the nation happy in the last two games.
That was Sheikh Mashaba, South Africa's head coach, speaking in Mongomo. In Malabo, the Confederation of African Football Secretary General Hicham El Amrani is satisfied that all 16 teams have settled well for the tournament. He explains.
They do have places to stay. Of course, they have different standards. They are not the same whether you're in Malabo or whether you're in Ebebin. But this is the reality of the infrastructure that we have. But those infrastructures allowed us to host all the teams correctly. It is true that in one or two cases, the start was a bit harsh because all the conditions were maybe not met when the teams arrived, but this is what we have corrected with the local organizing committee. And today, all the key essentials are being met, even if we're still working to make those requirements even better, whether in terms of transport or housing and so on.
That was Hicham El Amrani, the Confederation of African Football Secretary General, speaking in Malabo. Voice of America!
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on The Voice of America. One of the songs associated with the 30th Nations Cup in Equatorial Guinea is called Football is Connecting Us, and it's by Mr. Chichi. Let's give it a listen. Mr. Chi-Chi with his Nations Cup song, Football is Connecting Us. The Football Connection will be back on Wednesday in Equatorial Guinea's port city of Bata, where there will be two more Group A Nations Cup matches. In the first match Wednesday, Equatorial Guinea will host 2013 Nations Cup finalist Burkina Faso, and that will be followed by a game between Gabon and Congo-Brazzaville. Gabon is coming off an impressive 2-0 victory over Burkina Faso in its opener, while the Congolese drew 1-1 with Equatorial Guinea. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang scored Gabon's first goal, and in the words of our Nightline Africa sportsman, Shagun Dot on the spot Adeyemi, Aubameyang is one of the players to watch at this 30th Nations Cup. Aubameyang was a finalist for the 2014 African Footballer of the Year Award, which was won for a record fourth consecutive time by Manchester City and Ivory Coast star Yaya Toure. And if you're just tuning in now to the Voice of America, Yaya and his brother Kolo were both on the pitch this evening in Malabo, Equatorial Guinea's capital. Ivory Coast and Guinea played to a 1-1 draw in the first Nations Cup match of the day. Mali is going to play Cameroon in the second match in Equatorial Guinea's capital. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 hours UTC. Right here on the Voice of America. Well, coming up in our series on non-traditional policing, we'll find out how some police officers are becoming teachers and mentors in the hopes of making everyone safer. And South Africa hopes to meet its deadline this year for the Millennium Development Goals. First, here's Beyonce with Love on Top. Beyonce, Love on Top. Well, no matter how hard they try or how many of them there are, police can't be everywhere. So some deputies with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department are looking for new ways to keep people safe in historically dangerous neighborhoods. In our series this week, To Protect and to Serve, Elizabeth Lee reports on how some police are becoming teachers and mentors in the hopes of making everyone safer.
At 14 years old, Brian Fuentes has experienced firsthand what many Americans only see on TV.
You're exposed to drugs, you're exposed to gang violence, you're exposed to homicides, you're exposed to all sorts of dangers.
Fuentes is from South Los Angeles, an area plagued by poverty and crime.
7, 8, 9, 10.
But there is a safe haven here in an old police station that's been turned into an after-school youth center for students. It's called a Youth Activities League and is the result of a partnership between law enforcement and the nonprofit group Sheriff's Youth Foundation. Whether it's schoolwork, a game of basketball, or advice, students can get help there from staff, volunteers, and deputies from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. 17-year-old Andrea Duran used to distrust law enforcement.
I used to think they were just bad, the bad guys, catching the bad guys.
But that negative image of law enforcement quickly changed when Duran started coming to the Youth Activities League and got to know the deputies personally.
They can feel like family. That's what they are to me now.
I'm going
to
come today. 1, 2, 3.
This type of non-traditional policing helps break down preconceived stereotypes. Among many immigrants, that means showing them police in the U.S. are different from law enforcement in their home countries, says Deputy Alma Gonzalez, whose parents are immigrants.
In Mexico, unfortunately, you do hear a lot of corruption. There is a lot of corruption. And then coming to this country, whatever contact they had had with the law enforcement, it wasn't very positive because of either immigration or the uniform. It's intimidating.
Working with the youth is one way to change that perception, says Los Angeles County Sheriff Jim McDonald.
Getting to a family through their children allows us to be able to have an opportunity to really take our relationships to another level.
Now we're taking away 8, what's left.
McDonald says community outreach is one reason why violent crimes have been decreasing countywide. But gangs and crime still exist here, and having places like the Youth Activities League in urban neighborhoods throughout the county gives young people another option, says Deputy Bruce McCall.
I try and do things to educate youth and encourage youth and expose youth to new and exciting things that they don't limit themselves to what may be going on in their community.
Most students who attend this after-school program for at least 6 months have improved self-esteem and are more confident in school. Brian Fuentes says he wants to go to college and pursue a career in law enforcement so he too can help those in need. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
South Africa is now the leader of the United Nations Group of 77, a coalition of developing nations within the international body. The new post puts South Africa in a position both of power and responsibility as the UN enters its deadline year for the Millennium Development Goals, global targets for developing nations. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell looks at how Africa's most developed nation plans to tackle this global challenge.
South African officials know they have picked a particularly interesting year to land leadership of the United Nations Group of 77. The year 2015 will present an unprecedented challenge to the UN's largest coalition of developing nations, as this is the deadline year for the Millennium Development Goals, the UN's 8 global targets. The G77 represents a third of the UN's membership and includes nations as diverse as Bosnia and Herzegovina, a once war-torn nation that is now striving to join the European Union, and Somalia, a chaotic, violent, woefully underdeveloped nation on Africa's east coast. South Africa's Deputy Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, Llewellyn Landers, made clear that he understood the gravity of the situation in his acceptance speech before the group in New York this week. The development goals, he said, will be a top priority.
This year will prove to be a crucial year in which the various envisaged development processes would demand that we as a group remain even more steadfast in promoting the interests of developing countries. The MDGs adopted in the year 2000 set bold targets for development and were key in forging a global cooperation framework for development. Foremost in our efforts this year will be the evaluation of the progress made in reaching these goals and the negotiation of the post-2015 development agenda.
But Landers also reminded the world's superpowers of the collective might of the group. South Africa has repeatedly hinted at its own global ambitions, notably by joining BRICS, the economic bloc of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Landers noted that the Group of 77 will continue to press to upturn the Northern Hemisphere's grip on global power. All five of the UN Security Council's permanent members, Britain, China, France, Russia, and the US, are northern nations.
South-South cooperation is key for international cooperation and partnerships for development. This is especially in terms of global, regional, and country-level efforts to achieve balanced, sustainable development. We must reiterate that South-South cooperation is not intended to be a substitute for the obligations and responsibilities of the North. Over the last few years, several developing countries have become the key drivers of global growth, and their development is having a significant impact on the world economy. Growth and economic development in the South has significantly altered the strategic balance of power towards the countries of the South.
This year could bring about the shift in power dynamics that South Africa has called for so many years at the UN. Or the hoped-for outcome could dissolve into nothing but words again, with no solution in sight. Either way, 2015 is going to be interesting. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to African News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Raids and suicide attacks by Boko Haram terrorists have wreaked havoc in northeast Nigeria and border areas of Cameroon in recent weeks. The mounting death toll shows once again that the group has no regard for individual human life or the lives of Nigerians and their neighbors as a whole. The latest outrage came January 11th. When two suspected child bombers blew themselves up and killed three other people in a market in the town of Patiskum in Yobe State, a frequent target of the terror group. More than 20 people were reported wounded in the strike, which came a day after a bomb strapped to a girl said to be only 10 years old exploded in a busy marketplace in Maiduguri, killing at least 16 people and injuring more than 20. These, in turn, followed the deaths of perhaps hundreds in the northeast town of Baga, where Boko Haram fighters, not content with a killing spree, also burned down homes in 2 days of mindless violence after seizing control there. The United States condemns the recent escalation of attacks on civilians carried out by Boko Haram. We extend our sympathies to the loved ones of all victims of violence at the hands of Boko Haram. All those responsible for these recurring terrorist attacks must be held accountable. We are committed to working with Nigeria and its neighbors to end the scourge of Boko Haram, and we remain absolutely committed to helping the government meet its security needs. We urge Nigeria and its neighbors to take all possible steps to address the urgent threat of Boko Haram. That said, even in the face of these horrifying attacks, terrorist organizations like Boko Haram must not distract Nigeria from carrying out credible and peaceful elections that reflect the will of the Nigerian people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Ebola is actually a difficult disease to catch. It's not transmitted through the air like the flu. You cannot get it from just riding on a plane or a bus. The only way that a person can contract the disease is by coming into direct contact with the bodily fluids of somebody who is already showing symptoms. We know how to fight this disease. We know the protocols. And we know that when they're followed, they work. And if we take the steps that are necessary, if we're guided by the science, the facts, not fear, then I'm absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak here in the United States, and we can continue to lead the world in this urgent effort.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.